Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, the host of Proof to Product, and I would like to wish all of our US-based listeners a very happy Thanksgiving. Me and the Proof to Product team are taking this week off to spend quality time with our family and friends, and I hope that you'll be able to do the same. While we're gone, we've lined up something special just for you. We will be airing two episodes that I recorded with my friends Kelly and Caroline over at Creative Biz Rebellion. They were kind enough to have me on their podcast not once, but twice. The first time we talked about all things wholesale, and then they invited me back to talk about trade shows. And this week, we're rerunning both of their episodes over here on Proof to Product. So a big thanks to Kelly and Caroline for having me on their show. And if you're not already familiar with Creative Biz Rebellion, please go check it out. Kelly and Caroline are amazing women, and they do a great job of supporting product-based business owners through their programs and their podcast. And they were also both guests over here on Proof to Product. So I will include all of those notes and links in the show notes here. Have a wonderful week, friends, and thank you for listening and supporting Proof to Product. I am so grateful for each and every one of you.
This is the Creative Biz Rebellion podcast, and you're listening to episode 28.
Running a product-based business is hard,
but it doesn't have to be. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Caroline, and we are here to help you filter through the crap to totally rock your product-based business.
After all, creativity is the ultimate rebellion.
To get information about today's episode and past episodes, go to www.creativebizrebellion.com. Now on to the show. Hey Rebels, Caroline and Kelly here, and we are super excited, super, super excited, like really, really excited to have my dear friend Katie Hunt with us today, and we are going to chat all things wholesale. We have been getting a ton, and I mean a ton of
like
questions.
Like a truck ton, like a ton, yeah, like a ton. Yeah.
I mean, like, seriously, everybody's like, do an episode on wholesale. Do an episode on wholesale. Well, here it is, guys.
Here it is. Ball package up and pretty for you. We'll put a big bow on it. We got you covered. Yeah.
Nice. So I knew going into this that we needed an expert. And my go-to wholesale lady is Katie. And she is the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp. And I'm going to let her talk about who she is and what she does. And then you're all going to want to go jump on all the things and all the mailing lists and all the things. And so we'll be sure to put all those links. So anyways, welcome to the show, Katie.
Thank you so much for having me. You know, I love talking wholesale, so I feel like it's an honor to get to talk wholesale with you and your audience too. So thanks for having me.
Yay, yay. Awesome. So just tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do and how you got into this whole wholesale thing.
It's a spiral or zig and zag road, if I can say that. So I got into this whole thing by accident. I was actually a business coach for attorneys for about 13 years and was working in-house at large law firms, helping them build their brands and build their strategies around getting new business. And at the time, I needed a creative outlet. I was getting married in 2008. I started my stationery line called Kelp Designs. And, you know, if I'm going to do anything, I'm going to do it big. So about 6 months after launching that brand, I decided I was going to exhibit at the National Stationery Show and release my line to the wholesale market.
Go, Katie!
Yeah, you know, because why not? I didn't know anything about the product-based world. I was in the service-based world, but no, needless to say, I had some troubles at my first show. You know, some of my products weren't priced right. We had some issues with fireproofing and got shut down by the fire marshal the day before the show opened.
Oh my gosh. There's
a lot to my story there that I shared during our paper camp course, but it was a tough one to learn the hard way. But you know, I picked myself back up and I was ready to go when the show opened, and we had some orders and we did well that show. I mean, it wasn't as great as I had wanted and the booth didn't look the exact way I wanted, but you know, we faked it till we made it. So after that show, one of my good friends asked me to write a blog post about all the things I wish I had known heading into the trade show. And I wrote, you know, like, I don't know, my five things I wish I'd known. And that was in 2009. And then in 2010 and 2011, when the National Stationery Show rolled around, I started getting inundated with emails asking me the same types of questions over and over. And they were from small companies like myself who wanted to know, how much does this really cost? How much product do I need to bring? How the heck do I get everything there? You know, it was a lot of the same. And I was, you know, still in my day job with the lawyers and trying to build the stationery brand. And I'd sit there and thoughtfully write everyone back, answering all their specific questions. And, you know, there were some stuff I knew, some I didn't, and I was very candid about the things I didn't know and still am. But I, at one point, turned to my good friend Karina from Crow and Canary, and I said, you know, we should just get a bunch of people on a phone call, and like, you know stuff I know, and I know stuff you don't know, and you know, like, let's just share the things we've learned along the way in building these businesses and help each other kind of bypass these, you know, holes that we're stepping in. And she's like, Katie, you're crazy. You've got, you know, a business and a day job and two kids at that point. And I said, no, this is something I really believe in. Like, we need to support each other and we need a place for us to really connect and share our resources and our knowledge. And so she said yes. And we started our first trade show bootcamp courses in 2011. There were 4 teleconference calls. And I look back and I'm like, how like corporate was I? But and how silly was that? But we then moved to online webinars that were live each week at the end or at the beginning of 2012, and we did our first in-person event in 2012. So now it's been 6 years and we do conferences. We just had our 10th Paper Camp conference. Wow. And we do courses. I think we've done over 150 online courses in that time. Wow. And we do one-on-one coaching too. And so, you know, bootcamp is really about the community. It's really about everyone that's involved. It's everyone coming together to share their resources, share their experiences, share their knowledge. And that includes our speakers that volunteer their time and expertise, but it also includes our alumni community. We have a very active Facebook group where people are sharing, you know, their research as they're trying to source new product categories and things like that. So it's very much about, you know, all of us working together to make our industry thrive.
Amazing. That's awesome.
I love that story. I love your story of your first stationery show.
Oh, gosh. You know, you got to go through some of that stuff to eventually find the right way. But, yeah. That's
true. That is definitely true. Okay. So now that we know your story, you're going to help us break down wholesale for all of our listeners. So let's just start at the very, very, very beginning. How do you know that you're ready for wholesale?
So I'm going to give you some metrics that you can cut like a checklist of things I really want you to have dialed in before you wholesale. But I want to start off this conversation by saying that most people don't know, truly know, if they're ready for wholesale, because it's different than selling direct to consumer. It requires a totally different strategy than selling online through your shop or selling at craft shows or, you know, selling direct to the end consumer. Because if you think about it, the end consumer is picking up your card. They're thinking about the person they're going to send it to. Or if you sell candles or jewelry, they're thinking about who they're going to gift that to or how they're going to use it in their own home. But when you're selling wholesale, your customer is a retail store. And their needs are different. The criteria that they examine or the things they think about before they make a purchase is totally different. They're thinking about their shelf space. They're thinking about their profit margins. They're thinking about how your products are going to tie in and look and merchandise well with the rest of the things on their shelves. So you need to think about it from that standpoint first so that you know how to actually sell your things.
Right.
But in terms of like the logistical side of how to know if you're ready, I always tell people you need to focus on your product first. And in the stationery world, we always tell people that they need to have at least 48 SKUs in their line. Mm-hmm. And that means 48 individual products. And the reason for this is you want to have a large enough line that the retailer can pick and choose different items to purchase and still hit your minimum opening order amount. And I know I'm using a lot of jargon here, and I'll talk about this in a minute, but really your product needs to be your first point that you get dialed in. And that means your pricing. You want to have enough of your product. You want to make sure that you can process your orders quickly, that you're not going to take a long time to get them out the door. And the other thing is, with wholesale, it's expected that you'll have inventory and that you can ship things pretty quickly. So if you are in a handmade business where you're actually making each piece as it goes out the door, you'll want to find a way to scale that and either find manufacturing help or get people on your team to help with the actual creating of your product. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
That makes absolute sense. Yeah. And that was a big eye-opener for me when I started diving into wholesale, because I think like a lot of our listeners – this happens to a lot of us. I was actually approached first. So the idea of wholesale never entered my mind until somebody came to me and said, hey, do you sell wholesale? And then I was like, I don't know. And then I'm like Googling.
How to wholesale. Yeah.
Yeah. And when I went to Paper Camp, that was the thing that was like the biggest eye-opener for me, was this idea that you had to have enough variety. You had to have a large number of products for retailers to pick from. Because I'm going to tell you right now, in my experience selling wholesale, retailers never buy what I think they're going
to
buy.
Right? Every year I would go to the National Stationery Show, or every year that I released a new collection, you know, multiple times a year, I would think – I'd choose the one thing I thought was going to be the bestseller, and it never was. Oh, I was like, never. Oh, this one's going to be the hot one. Nope.
Never.
Something different.
I recently had a run of wholesale products where it was all boxed sets.
Yeah.
And for the most part, I haven't had a lot of wholesale orders for box sets. And so I literally went through this month where I was just like, oh my gosh, if somebody else orders a box set, I'm going to scream. Because, you know, I had flushed out this really big line of greeting cards. So,
yeah
you just – I think that's key. I think a lot of times we start our little Etsy shops and we're like, oh, we're going to jump into wholesale. But you really need to make sure that you have that variety and that collection,
right,
that cohesive collection put together.
Yeah, and you don't want to, like, discourage people, like, crafty, you know, like, small businesses.
Right.
Because, like, I get approached for wholesale quite often, even though I do personalized products. And so it's a little bit different for me. Like, I don't sell a lot of wholesale to brick and mortars, but, like, to online stores, I can. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because they can post different varieties and make sure that it's, you know, personalized, and they give me more lead time. So you have to think of all those things when you're even – thinking about going wholesale, because I avoided it for a really long time because I was like, well, wait, I sell personalized products. This is
well, you can still sell. I love that you brought this up, Kelly, because you can absolutely sell personalized products wholesale. But in your case, I agree that, you know, with the online shops, it tends to be more of the gift items that are personalized.
Right.
Through the brick and mortar shops, it tends to be more the wedding albums. And that is a totally different strategy too. Like I could sit down and have a long talk with you about like drop shipping options for you, so that it really takes you out of the middle and like all sorts of fun ways that make it simpler for you. But but a traditional wholesale business where you have off the shelf products that are not personalized or customized or whatever it is, you do want to have like enough of a variety that they can choose from, because unfortunately, as much as we would like them to, these retailers are not going to buy everything we sell. They're not going to say, give me six of everything. Oh, I wish they would though. But so having that variety, it not only gives them enough to choose from, but it gives that – it keeps them coming back. You know, if you have other things that they like, but, you know, maybe they'll come back again and reorder in, you know, a few months. So
with variety, would you also recommend then a great span of price points?
So I'm a fan of simplicity, and I think having too many price points can get confusing. Because wholesale buyers, especially if you're in a show setting, they come in and it's like, bam, bam, bam. They want to like, I want that. They're pointing at the wall. And if you have, you know, 10 different price points, that can make it really hard to write up the order, just because it slows down the process and you need to be meticulous about what all the different price points are. They'll have a lot more questions if you have a lot more price points.
True.
So I think, I mean, obviously, you know, greeting cards are going to have a different price point than, you know, pillows or jewelry or whatever it might be. But even, you know, in the same world of art prints versus greeting cards, they're going to be different. But I think if you can have at least the same pricing within different product categories, that will help streamline things.
Great.
Yeah. So the other thing I wanted to mention, though, is terms and conditions, because as Caroline mentioned, there was when you get approached, you don't know what your terms and conditions are. You don't know how this works, how your pricing works and all that stuff. So you want to know how these terms and conditions work. And so let me give you – can I give a quick list of what you want to include in the terms and conditions?
We love lists. Please. Yes.
Okay. I know. I'm such a type A list maker.
No, it's totally fine.
So the first thing is you want to know your minimum order requirement. And that means how much do they have to spend to place a wholesale order with you? In the stationery world, this is typically $150. Reorders are typically $100. The next item is a minimum order quantity. And that's how many of each SKU. So if you sell a particular greeting card, they have to purchase that a minimum number of 6 of that SKU. And that those minimum order quantities do vary by product type. Yeah, but so you want to know what your industry is asking for in those. You'll want to talk about your turnaround times, your payment methods. If you offer returns or exchanges, you'll definitely want to note your policies there. And then I think that's about it.
Yeah, and I would say if you have any questions as you're setting up your terms and conditions, one of my favorite things to do is go on Issue. It's issuu.com. And a bunch of people put their wholesale catalogs on Issue. Yep. And it is a great place to go. And, you know, so if you're a jewelry designer, go find a jewelry wholesale catalog and see what their terms and conditions are, what their minimums are. And that'll help you kind of get an idea of what's standard in your industry. So I know sometimes it's hard to find out that information unless you're a retailer. Yeah. So that's my favorite place to look.
The other resource I'd offer up here is I taught 4 classes for Creative Live last year. Yes. And they were aimed at wholesale for makers. So it wasn't just stationery industry like my paper camp courses are, but there was 2 in particular that I think your audience would be interested in. The Beginner's Guide to Wholesale, which covers all these terms and conditions and things they need to know. And I have a checklist too of how to kind of know if you're ready for wholesale there. Oh, great. And then the catalog one, which also ties in with these terms and conditions. It shows how to build that catalog and how to build these sales tools. I mean, frankly, all 4 classes are really great, if I can say that about my own classes.
Of course.
But they, you know, and the price point's phenomenal. If you buy the bundle of all 4, it's under $80. So it's, yeah.
That's a steal. Yeah. Yeah. And I would highly recommend those guys because this, if you're even thinking about wholesale, I think educating yourself the best you can before you jump in is really important. It's going to help you just kind of know how to handle yourself with retailers and just make you feel more confident. And they like confidence, those retailers. They really do. And so, you know, I went to Paper Camp, which was really big for me. But I've actually took a couple of your online courses before I did National Stationery Show for the second time as a refresher. So, I mean, it's just good to do that. So I highly recommend those online classes. Thanks, Karen. Guys.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, we've had a lot of people that come back to Paper Camp. A couple, you know, I think the one person's been 3 times and that's the most. But I will say that you pick up different information every time you take one of these classes, even if it's the same type of thing, because your business is in a different phase and your struggles or the things you're worrying about are different. You know, at the very beginning, you're just trying to figure it all out. And then later, once you've got some orders coming in, you're trying to streamline the process. And, you know, you're also trying to figure out how to reach out to retailers to let them know about your new releases and things like that.
Yeah. One of these days I'll make it.
We'd love to have you.
I wanted to go this past one so bad, but I had too many commitments in February.
I know. It's tough. We typically do them in February and September. At least that's what it's been the last 5 years. So
we'll probably stay true to that. It's a goal for sure.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Plus it's in California.
Hello. I've never been to California. I know. That would just kill 2 birds with 1 stone.
There you go. I know. I keep getting probably weekly I get asked to go elsewhere. The latest was asked to go to Australia, which, hey, maybe.
leave that one. I mean, you might want to do that.
It's just the reason we keep it in LA is we've got a great venue here, and I also have 4 young children, and so it makes it easier for the planning process just to keep it close to home. So
yeah. We understand that 100%.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So let's say you're getting ready for wholesale, you've gotten everything, you've got your policies, you've figured out everything that you need to have, and then you get your first wholesale order.
Yeah.
So how can you make sure that this order goes smoothly? And I felt like this was a really important question to ask because I feel like when I got my first wholesale order, I panicked.
Did you? Yeah, I think I did too with mine.
Yeah, I think I was excited, but I think I was also like, oh my gosh, I got to make sure it's perfect because, you know, I don't want them telling other people that I'm not good at this or something. I don't know.
Which, by the way, I think we all feel that insecurity. So I want you to know you're not alone there. I did too. But secondly, they're not talking about us unless it's like horribly like packaged or you just, you know, pull a boneheaded move and are unpolite and unprofessional. They're not going to talk about it with anyone else. Yeah. But so I guess a couple of things I wanted to touch on with this. You always want to communicate clearly with your buyers. So if you're getting that order ready and you experience a delay of some sort with, you know, creating your product, or if you're outsourcing and there's a delay getting it to you, just communicate that with them. Let them know if their order is delayed at all. And just keep those lines of communication open. The other thing is these aren't necessarily any particular order, but there are things I want to mention. You never want to charge your wholesale order. Like, you don't want to charge their credit card until you're ready to ship the order. That's a big no-no. So if people are receiving orders today and they're not shipping it, you know, for a couple of months, you won't charge their credit card until you ship it a couple months later. And that's something that really is a red flag. If you're new to wholesale, if you charge that card, people are going to say, wait a minute, what's going on here? Because they also time their shipments with their credit card cycles and with their turns in their store. Maybe they don't have a lot of inventory space in their shops, so they want to get those boxes in time just to put them straight out on the shelf. So those are two things. But the biggest one, in my opinion, is pack your order so that everything arrives in one piece, safe and sound. This is an area where function over fashion is going to be critical. You want to make sure that your stuff gets there in one piece and doesn't get damaged. And, you know, there's a lot of people that say, oh, but I want the pretty box with the crinkle cut and the, you know, all this stuff. And to be honest with you, if you're doing that to impress the buyer's not always the one opening those boxes and getting things out onto the shelf. Sometimes it's whoever's working in the shop that day. Or if it's a bigger retailer, it's, you know, goes to a warehouse to be unpacked. So you want everything to, you know, look nice and clean and organized and easy for them to find. But ultimately, you just want to get it there in one piece. So I always tell people, make it as simple for, well, on the ordering side, before they buy, make it as simple as you can for the buyer to buy. But on the packaging side, just make sure everything arrives in one piece and it's clearly marked and labeled and easy for them to cross compare and make sure everything's there.
I love that. I love that. And if you're and just a little tip that I've learned along the way, if you're sending a bunch of different things and they should be packaged for retail, so they should be able to take them out, put them on the shelf, right? Yeah. I always put sheets to divide my products. That way, so like say they ordered three of this and then I put a sheet and then there's three here and I put a sheet. That way, as they're going through their order checklist and they're unboxing it, it's really easy for them to make sure that they have everything. And it also helps protect the products too.
Totally. So. Yeah. Some people put sheets. Some people use belly bands to wrap, you know, items together. Some people use just twine or something, you know, obviously do whatever. The sheets are easy and fast and don't cost a lot. So that's a great example. Some people also use the belly bands with the sticker or a stamp to distinguish what the SKU number is, so that just whatever you decide to do, make sure that it's clear and easy and simple.
Yeah, totally. And then I also just wanted to kind of side note this. I know a lot of our listeners are on Etsy and are thinking about doing Etsy wholesale.
Yeah.
And guys, this stuff still applies to Etsy wholesale. So even I treat my Etsy wholesale customers the same way I treat my customers who fax me in an order form or email me an order form. People still fax. It's amazing.
Isn't it crazy? This just came up at camp this weekend. Somebody's like, do people still use fax? And I'm like, they do. But we have an e-fax, so it just comes straight into email. But
Yeah, that's what I do too. But I always laugh at that because I was telling somebody that the other day. I was like, yeah, you know, a lot of them still fax, especially in my wedding album peeps. They still fax in their order forms. And all.
That is hilarious.
Yeah, I think it's so funny. But anyways.
The wedding stuff makes a little more sense to me just because they're sitting at a table with the couple and like actually writing out the order. And so it's easier for them probably. But frankly, I'd snap a picture and email it. But
there's an app for that. Crazy. There's an app called Genius Scan, and you take a picture of the whatever you're doing, and it turns it into a PDF, and you can email it to somebody.
I love that. I use one of those for my receipts as I'm doing stuff for work. I take a snap of my receipts. So
yeah. But yeah, so you treat the Etsy wholesale customers the same way. So even though it's in their kind of ordering system, I still don't charge. I don't, you know, I don't send the invoice or whatever until it's ready to ship. And so I know that sometimes, you know, we think Etsy's a different thing, but, you know, those are still the same retailers that are functioning outside of Etsy wholesale. So if you're thinking about Etsy wholesale, these same things are going to apply.
Something came up this weekend at Paper Camp that I think your audience might be interested in. We talked with Heather Haney. She's one of the owners of Rock, Paper, Scissors in Virginia. Yeah. And one of the audiences on Etsy wholesale, one of our campers was on Etsy wholesale, and they asked about starter packs and asked if Heather was interested in starter packs, because I guess Etsy wholesale is doing this whole push for people to have starter packs.
Yeah, they are.
So I'm actually gonna tell you not to do starter packs. Yeah. So Heather's feedback, which I agree with, is that retailers want to be able to pick and choose their own products. They won't necessarily want to buy a set grouping of products. And oftentimes, if you do offer a group setting, they're probably gonna want to switch some things out, right? And so I would encourage you to note things as bestsellers, note them as new when you release them for the first time. Mm. You know, I mean, if it's something that's working on Etsy wholesale and you're seeing a lot of traction with your starter kits, then great, fine, keep them. I mean, what's the harm in that? But I will tell you that the more traditional buyers, the more experienced buyers that know what they're doing and know their store very well, they want to pick and choose. They want to know – you know, what you're offering, and they want to choose what they're selling or what they're buying from you, rather.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that, because when they sent out the little thing that they were pushing the starter packs and that you needed to create, you know, they were like, have two or three for retailers to pick from. I was like, really? I mean, there's definitely a part of me that was like, really?
That sounds weird.
Know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, well, and, you know, we talked about this too in our alumni forum, and the conversation is still ongoing, so I don't know where the consensus will land, but, you know, a few people have said they created them because they were urged to by Etsy wholesale, but it didn't seem like traction was happening. And one of them was even like highlighted on one of the Etsy homepages or emails or something. I can't remember what type of marketing it was. Yeah. And she said she'd had some traction, but, you know, I don't know. I think Etsy wholesale is fascinating. I think it's a great way for people to dip their toe into wholesale and get exposure to new stores. And I think it's a great way for buyers to kind of scope out smaller independent companies that they're looking for. So I don't think it's a bad thing. But in a typical wholesale relationship or transaction, a buyer is going to want to pick and, you know, pick what they want.
Yeah. The Etsy wholesale thing has been really interesting for me, because I had a ton of wholesale orders at the end of last year before Christmas. Yeah, it was great. And they were all these little shops, you know, and in the Southwest and the West, which is exactly where my stuff needs to be. Yeah. And so that was really exciting for me, because I've done the trade shows. I've done, you know, just reaching out and sending the mailers, and I've done
your catalog,
you know, Etsy wholesale. So it's really interesting to me to see who finds me where. So definitely an avenue to think about. I don't know.
No, I definitely think it's a good spot for people to hang out and just see, because even if you don't do anything to really boost it, it's like another place to be seen. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Totally. Well, I think it's the same thing just with Etsy in general. You know, I mean, it's just, why not be there?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, why not? The people are there, so why not? But focus all your efforts on your main site and your main wholesale list and your main connections. Yeah, but have that. Who cares, you know?
Yeah, it's been interesting. You know, so I got into my business in 2008, and at that point we were all, you know, Etsy was just kind of starting up, and we were all on Etsy, and then there was this push to like, oh, well, if we want to do wholesale, we should probably get off Etsy so we look like serious, legit businesses.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so people got off, and then, you know, they were building their own e-commerce platforms and all that, but there wasn't a Shopify. There wasn't, you know, the easier Squarespace wasn't an option with e-commerce. Like, all these things weren't possible. So people were building like custom e-commerce sites and which is a lot of money and it's a big investment. And so, you know, and then it kind of swayed back where people were like, you know what? Like, I'm not going to invest this money there. I'm going to just like point to my Etsy shop from my regular website and, you know, that'll be that. And then Etsy wholesale came on the scene. And I mean, there's a lot of big brands that still have Etsy shops and their own online shop. And yes, like you said, Kelly, they are pushing people to their own space, their own digital home, so to speak. But yeah, why not still have it there and list it? I mean, if it's starting to take away from your business, if it's costing you too much time or you're having to hire people to manage the Etsy shop, then maybe give it a second thought of like, should we keep doing this? But, you know, otherwise I say, why not?
Yeah, right. Totally. So, okay. So we've got our first order. We sent it successfully. Everything showed up in one piece. Yeah. What happens after the order? What do you need to do after?
So after the order, I would just encourage you to continue releasing new product on a regular basis. At PaperCamp, we typically recommend 3 to 4 releases a year, and that means you're releasing new product about once a quarter. But build up to that. Most people tend to do one big release a year, and it tends to be right around the National Stationery Show time in our paper world. But even newer companies to wholesale, they're either doing one big release a year or they're just kind of trickling out new products as they think of them. And that is not a strategic way to go. You want to build it into a more cohesive collection that you release. If you can even get to 3 times a year, that would be ideal. And the reason for this is it's going to be easier for you in how you're marketing and pushing this stuff out. And it's going to give buyers an easier time buying from you too, because they know at one time they're getting a bunch of new stuff or a bunch of new options. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
So, you know, once you develop that new release, you're then going to want to get it on your website. You're going to want to notify your wholesale customers that they've got these new options. You're going to want to add it to your online catalog and put that back on issue or on your website. Having a new release of product is probably the number one reason to reach out to your stores. It gives you a really great reason to say, hey, look at all what's new. And you can do that over emails. You can send a snail mail pack with a catalog and some samples. There's a lot of different ways that we recommend reaching out to retailers. Two things I do not recommend are showing up at their door and asking to talk to them or like sell to them right then and there, or picking up the phone and cold calling them. People are just too busy and it doesn't have a, you know, it's not the right way to go. So definitely start with an email or a snail mail package. If you do live locally, you could always ask to set up an appointment with them at a time that's good for them, but never just show up unannounced.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think if I owned a store, I would like that either. Like, no, I've got stuff going on. You know what I mean? Right. And it's not that I don't want to like see anyone's stuff, or I wouldn't want to, you know, ooh and ah over it, but there's a, yeah, you know, let me know you're coming at least.
Right.
Please.
Right. I agree. Yeah. I mean, I don't like it when solicitors show up at my door. If I owned a shop, I wouldn't want that either.
Right.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
So in my brain, like I try to be really organized.
Yeah.
And so how do you recommend people keep all of this straight? You know, are there any like online tools or things that you know of for someone to keep their retailer list straight, their SKUs, their inventory? Like, do you have any tips for that?
Well, there's lots of tools out there. There's not like one set, like this solves all problems, unfortunately. Right. But I will say that when I started, I was just simply using an Excel spreadsheet and I had different tabs for different things. I had a tab for prospect stores. I had a tab for current accounts. I had a tab with our SKUs. And even the one that had the SKUs had all sorts of multiple columns for different product categories and things like that. A lot of people are using Stitch Labs for their inventory management. The price has gone up on that pretty tremendously, though.
Yeah.
So it's pretty outrageous. I remember when it was $7 a month, and now I think it's like $500 a month or something.
Oh, my.
Yeah, for real. It's a lot. So, but there's also ways, like if you use QuickBooks Online for your bookkeeping, I think they have an inventory solution built in. They also even have an online ordering solution built in, I believe. I heard that some people were using QuickBooks to place orders at the show recently. In terms of mailing lists, I love ConvertKit. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love it because I can segment different people into different buckets. So if you are selling direct to consumer, you could have different tags for your retail customers so that they only receive your retail promotions and emails. And then you could have tags for people that you sell wholesale to or that you want to work with, and only give them your wholesale emails. Because again, those audiences are different and what they want to see from you is going to be different. Yeah. A lot of people use MailChimp and they just have separate lists. So they'll have a retail list and they'll have a wholesale list. And that's great for people starting out because it's free or really inexpensive.
Right.
I think with that though, just remember it's really about tailoring your messaging.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think starting from the very beginning, you know, I think that was a mistake that I made in my business. Like, I didn't keep track of connections early on. Like, I thought, why do I need someone's email? You know what I mean? Like, I didn't have a spreadsheet, you know? So I think if people are thinking about getting in wholesale or even just starting out in general, just make sure you're keeping track of that. ShipStation keeps track of my orders when I do email, so I'm sure they have something I could add.
I love ShipStation. ShipStation's great. The other thing I was going to offer up is there's a bunch of what they call CRM systems, client relationship management systems. Mm-hmm. Again, I haven't found any that are like, oh my God, this is like the total epitome of everything. But a lot of people in our community like Podio, P-O-D-I-O. And
I've never heard of that one.
Yeah, they like that one. And now these things are just a place to keep your contacts, a place to make notes about when they ordered or when you reached out. I would do that in my Excel grid when I first started out, and I would put notes like, and I think this is like extends back to my PR days when I was very first out of college, but I would write the date dash, you know, reached out, sent the first email or whatever it is. And so that way you can look back and you can see, oh yeah, we did reach out to them previously.
Yeah, I use Insightly for all of my wholesale people, and it's a CRM. And I started using it last year because after my third NSS, my list was getting really hard to manage.
Totally.
And also I wanted to keep track of, you know, oh, this person came into the booth and they liked XYZ, want me to send them a holiday catalog or something. I wanted to keep very specific notes. And then I've also found that's been incredibly helpful for emailing retailers. And so I keep track of all of our conversations. You're able to forward it and it puts it under their contacts. So, you know, when you get to a point where you're, you know, you're trying to remember what everybody likes and you're catering to needs and schedules and, you know, please send me this at this time and please send me this at this time. I found that was really good. And that was also good too for the media contacts that I made it at NSS, because a lot of them, you know, when you go to a trade show, everything happens so fast. Like, it's so easy. People walk into your booth. They're like, oh my gosh, hi, my name is so-and-so, and I'd love for you to send me XYZ after the show. And they hand you a business card, and then you jot it down really fast and stick it in your back pocket as the next person walks in. And so I found that really helpful to be able to go in and sit down and write all those notes out, you know? Totally. So,
yeah, no, you've heard me talk about this at Paper Camp, where it's like I categorize contacts that I meet at those shows and I put like an A on it if there's somebody that I need to follow up with quickly or a member of the press. And then on the card, I will write as many notes as I can, or a couple of our alums will do notebooks where they staple the business card in and write notes next to it.
Good idea.
But yeah, those trade shows are not only a place to sell stuff, but it's a place to do market research. It's about building your contact list. There's so many non-quantifiable ways or benefits to doing those shows, and contact generation is absolutely one of them. I will say I've also had people that came into my booth for like 3 years straight and finally bought from me on the fourth year they were there. So,
crazy.
There's no rhyme or reason. Just because somebody doesn't buy from you straight away, don't give up on them. Don't eliminate them from your mailing list. You know, just continue to build that relationship and remember that maybe it's just not the right time right then. But if they keep coming back, they're probably interested.
Yeah, absolutely. I recently, I can't even remember when it was. It was so long ago. I think it was after the stationery show. I sent out packages to people that I didn't see at the stationery show. Right. You know, before you do a trade show, you usually have a prospective wish list of retailers a mile long, and you do a mailing. And so you hope they come to your booth. Well, I did mailings afterwards to people that I didn't see, sent them a catalog, a little note. And then I got an email like 6 months later. I'm so sorry. I was just cleaning off my desk and I found this that you had sent. And then I had saved it because I loved your work. You know, we're kind of full of greeting cards right now, but please keep me on your list and let me know if you have anything new.
Awesome.
And that's, you know, that's really important. So I think that was a really good point you made. Just because people aren't buying doesn't mean they're not interested. You have to remember there's ebbs and flows in retail as well. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, she's going to stay on my mailing list.
Absolutely. I mean, I always tell people that your mailing list is one of the biggest, toughest parts of wholesaling, because you want to find – I'd much rather you have a smaller list of stores that are a really great fit for what you're offering than this huge mailing list, because you want to cultivate relationships with these people and you want to get to know them and you want them to get to know you. And so – but the mailing list, so it takes a lot of research, but it also is like an ongoing, never-ending project. You know, you're going to meet new people and new, and some people might come off, and that's just the way it goes.
Yeah.
I have a feeling people are going to ask about pricing, so I don't know if Katie could go over that a little bit.
For wholesale?
Yeah. Pricing for wholesale? It wasn't in the notes, I know, but like I think people are going to ask. They're going to know how do we price it. So I don't know if you could touch on that.
So pricing for wholesale is there's a term we use called keystoning, and that basically means that a retailer is going to double your wholesale price to get to their retail price. So if you sell a greeting card for $2.50, the retailer is going to mark it up to at least $5. However, there's a caveat to this. Some places like New York or California, where they have high overhead or larger expenses, they might mark it up more than keystone. They might make it $5.50 or $6. And so the things to consider here are, one, when you're wholesaling and you send them your product and they buy it, they're buying it outright and they can sell it for whatever they want to sell it for. So you set that wholesale price, they set the retail price. You don't necessarily want to tell them what your MSRP is or any of that stuff, because again, it's going to vary from region to region or between store to store. But this also comes into play when you're selling both retail and wholesale, because let's use that example, $2.50 wholesale, $5 is keystoned. You don't want to sell your products on your own retail site for less than $5, because if you do, you're going to be undercutting your retailer. In fact, in some cases, we tell people to go a little bit above keystone. So in this example, maybe you sell your greeting card for $5.25 on your website, because the point is you want to incentivize your customers to go into the retail shops that you're selling to and buy from them, rather than coming to your website and buying directly from you. If you were to price your greeting card at $4.50 on your website, they'd probably come buy from you, even though there's shipping and all this other stuff tied to it.
Right.
Yeah. And also, you need to make sure too that when you're doing your wholesale pricing and when you're thinking about that, that you are making sure that you are still profiting.
Yes. Very talk about coming to your wholesale price. So yeah, absolutely. You know, two things I want to say about this. One is, if you decide you want to sell wholesale, you do not need to sell everything that you offer to the wholesale market. So if you can't get your margins down for the wholesale market, you know, if you're just barely making it work for retail, then one, you either need to up your prices, or two, you just don't offer everything to the wholesale market. So when you're figuring out your wholesale pricing, we tend to talk about this in two directions: working from the bottom up, meaning calculate all of your production costs and see what materials and labor and time and all the different things, how much does it cost you to produce one single item? And so add that all up. And then compare it to the top down, meaning what is the market rate? What is the how much will the market bear for this product? So look around and see what other people are selling this for. And then usually there's a sweet spot between what the market rate is and where you are. And if your price is too high, you need to get your production costs down some way, somehow. Right. Otherwise, you can't. If you price things too low, you're not going to make any money. If you price it too high, you're not going to sell anything. So it's very sensitive. Your pricing needs to be very careful.
Yeah, it's tricky, but the numbers never lie.
No, they do not. The numbers. No, I love my numbers. I'm a little geeky like that.
I think this gives people a lot to think about, Kelly. What do you think?
Yeah.
I hope it wasn't too much.
I think it answers a lot of questions people have been asking us, and I think it's really great that we had Katie on to answer them, because I could not have done that as eloquently as she did.
Neither could I, and I sell wholesale, and I don't think I could explain it that way, you know?
Yes, well, thank you. I've had some practice, though, so don't cut yourself short.
Right. Well, it's just – it's its own beast, and that's – it is. You know, I think – I know for me, when I was a young stationery designer on Etsy, you know, I thought, oh, if I can make it in wholesale, then I can make it anywhere, kind of thing. And, you know, it's just a lot of work, guys. It's a lot of work. And
I agree. And if I can end with one thing in particular, I want to tell people that there's no one path for everyone's businesses. And just because you see somebody else doing something does not mean that it's the best thing for you to be doing. We have a lot of bootcamp alums that come through and they decide, nope, I'm not going to wholesale. My retail side is doing gangbusters and I want to focus there. We have people that you know, are doing custom work and opting out of their wholesale side. You know, I started trying to do all of it. I was doing custom work. I was selling retail through my online shop. And then I was doing wholesale. And really, that's just not sustainable because at least at the scale that I was with as a small shop, it wasn't sustainable. And it requires a different strategy, a different outreach, a different marketing plan, a different way to get your product out to your end customer for each of those avenues. And so what I want to encourage your listeners to do is to really hone in on what they enjoy doing and what they don't like doing. And also go back to what Kelly was saying, look at those numbers and see where you're most profitable and then have that help to make some of your decisions. We've had, you know, we've got a lot of different companies in our bootcamp community. Some are very large and some are small, just starting out. And I love seeing the shift. I love seeing the pivots that they've made because they're trying to stay, and they are staying true to their own brands and to what their personal needs are, whether it's, you know, personal circumstances that are driving the business decisions, or, you know, they've just decided, no, I don't want to spend my time there. But we have had people that have stopped doing custom work to focus solely on wholesale and, you know, all of the different things. So I guess my advice, my last parting advice would just be to focus on you and find out what you, really see what you like to do and what type of work really fires you up and where you're getting your most revenue from, and follow right. those numbers, because
yes.
you're running a business here. Even if it's, it feels like a hobby at times, it's a business. And we want to help you scale that. So
yeah, bottom line, we want to make money.
Yes,
bottom line. Sorry, call me un-PC, but
it's not un-PC.
Bottom line is we want to make money. So if it's
we're
not
here running
money,
a business to make money, and yeah. that money supports your family, it supports your business because you're able to reinvest in it.
Right.
There's no shame in saying you want to make money.
That's
mean,
right.
if we were doing this just for fun, we wouldn't be charging for it. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yep.
So no, you're running a business, and the goal of the business is to be self-sustaining and to bring yeah. in a profit and for you to get paid. So
right. And
no shame.
I love that you said everybody's different, because I think that when people start out in this business, like in the stationery gift world,
Anything,
product business, they think, well, when I sell wholesale, I've made it. Or when yeah. I'm in this store, I've made it. Or when
right.
I'm here, I've made it. And yeah. that isn't true for everybody. And
it's not true for anybody.
Right.
It's
and
not
some
true
people
for
may be in Target, you guys, but they may not be making that much money. You don't know,
yeah.
you know.
Right.
So I think everyone's different. There may be someone who's been on, I don't know, Zazzle, and they're making a crap ton of money and you don't even know about it.
Yeah.
You know,
right. but you also don't know what their costs are. So it may look like they're making a crap ton of money, but really they're not.
Right.
The other thing is, you know, I hear that a lot of like, oh, I just need to do NSS and then I've made it.
Yeah.
And Meg from Bell and Union said this so eloquently a couple years ago. She said, no, trade shows and like all things in business, but we were talking about NSS specifically this time, but she said, this is just one step in your bigger journey. This is not the end. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And so you need to really focus
right.
on just like, what's the next step ahead and what do I want to accomplish next? How can I improve my business? How can I improve my product? How can I make this stronger, better thing that I want to do?
Right.
Love it. Okay. So Katie, tell everyone where to find you and where to connect with you.
Sure. So I am at tradeshowcamp.com and I'm on social media at tradeshowcamp everywhere. There's no boot in there, just tradeshowcamp. And then if you guys are interested in my Creative Live classes, because I think that would be a really good starting point for your audience, you can go to tradeshowcamp.com/creative live. And that's going to take you to a video that you can kind of see what they're about. And then it links out to where the courses are so you can buy them. And those are done specifically through Creative Live. So when you go back to watch those, you'll do that directly through Creative Live.
Awesome. And then you have a mailing list too, right?
I do. Yeah. You can hop on our mailing list on our website at tradeshowcamp.com. And then we will have our paper camp conference and course, e-course coming up again in the fall. Those will likely be in September, but we haven't announced the dates yet. So if you hop on that mailing list, you'll be the first to know.
Awesome.
Love it.
Thank you so much, Katie.
Thank you, Katie,
so much for having me on. This was so much fun.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Later, Rebels.
Later.
Hey, Rebels. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Head over to iTunes and please leave us a review if you love what you've heard. Those reviews help us out so much. To connect with us, head to www.creativebizrebellion.com. Keep on rebelling.
I feel like now we'll start getting questions about trade shows, you know? That'll be the next thing. Caroline, when did you decide to do a trade show?
So that will be the part two. That needs to be the part two.
That would be awesome.